Hey everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Steven Andaboye, and this is part two. So part one, we were talking about self-love and just taking time for yourself and being the best version of yourself. But now we're talking about the second part, which is relationships. And again, special guest, Jessica.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be back. Yeah, it's really interesting. I was reflecting on like what we first talked about, and I suppose kind of where we decided to kind of come onto this, wasn't it? Was talking about how self-love and all of that kind of stuff fits into a relationship and how you look for relationships and pursue them and build a healthy relationship and things like that. And I think the more that I reflect on it, the more I think like it is so vital that the two pieces go together.
Yeah.
And it's just something that, you know, even as I talk to more clients or even just, you know, new potential clients, the thing is everyone has something which they feel like they're not deserving of a relationship. And that's something that comes up time and time again, and I'm like, self-love is so important.
So
it's funny like to see the two bits come together.
Yeah, and so I was talking to a friend about this and I thought I figured out the meaning of life.
Oh, yeah, go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with it right now. So, the meaning of life.
Got that one too.
I think it is, but I'm talking to you so you can question me if this is true or not. I think the meaning of life is relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, like, romantic relationships. I'm talking about relationships with yourself, relationships with how you look after yourself, health, fitness, your living, your relationship with a higher power. Everything is kind of interlinked in terms of how you work on those relationships, how you develop them. So when I kind of figured that out, I was like, okay, it's more of a balancing act.
Yeah.
So not necessarily putting your eggs in one basket in one area, but holistically, well, hopefully you guys can hear the music.
We are in Soho.
That's the location that we are in. But, you know, back to what I was saying, yeah, it's all about balance.
Yeah.
And when you have things in balance, you're able to be a better version of yourself and hopefully attract something that's good for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's funny. I don't know what I thought you were going to say when you were like, I found the purpose of life. But it is so true. And actually, I feel like I got there first. But it is true. I think when people are talking about, like, what's the point? You know, there's got to be more to life than this. And all of these questions that people go through. I think the key thing is what makes your life feel good? Mm. And the majority of the time, it's who we connect with. And just we're just, you know, one human connecting with another. And that's the power of everything. Like, that's how we build civilizations. That's, you know, where conflicts come from. It's where everything comes from. And what would we be if we lived in solitude? Like, it's...
Yeah.
I just think we wouldn't be able to be anything. So, I really agree with you that... Yeah. Relationships and connection with others is so vital, and yet somehow we're never really taught how to be in relationship. We kind of get, you know, these pressures or kind of what society and magazines and all of that tells us, or we get kind of what we've learned from our parents. And there's no kind of like how to be a decent human being and like communicate well with others, or how to be aware of other people's feelings, things like that. I mean, I definitely didn't learn about that at school.
No.
Because you didn't.
No, I think it's so weird because, you know, you're a child, you're learning from your parents, you know, whether you're consciously or not.
Yeah.
Then you become a teenager and you got hormones and you're awkward, or you're either just crazily obsessed in certain areas and you're just like, okay, that's another element of who you are. Then you grow out of that a little bit, and then you're developing yourself in the real world.
Yeah.
And then through all those experiences from, like, since you're a kid to a teenager to now being a young adult, how do you sort of pick that person? How do you even find yourself and then find that person? So it's a very strange place to be.
It's funny you mentioned that about being a teenager, and I do feel like there's very much two camps. There's kind of the... like, I don't want to say nerdy, but there's the people who, like, prioritize, like, school, education, extracurricular activities, and then there's the people who really value their social life. Where do you feel like you kind of fit it in there?
Okay, so, background. So, I came from a traditional Nigerian household, and so education was kind of the key here. And as much as I wanted to socialize and do all that stuff, no, I didn't get the opportunity to do that. So I was a little bit of a late bloomer.
Yeah.
And then I went to uni and I was like, how do I navigate through everything,
right? Oh, yeah.
So I actually started learning about social skills and just being, you know, able to sort of communicate my ideas, my thoughts, and just projecting my desires in terms of what I'm looking for. And I think that helped because sometimes, you know, if you peak early, you kind of just like, well, I've got everything made. So you think you're going to attract the same thing, but you don't work on yourself. Yeah, and then, you kind of settle very early. And for me, it was like, okay, there's option A, option B, option C. What works for me? Okay, I'm going to try this out. That didn't work, so I'm learning and I'm growing. And also my brain's kind of more mature than it was at 16. So I'm able to sort of work on that.
Yeah, it's so interesting kind of talking about, not like different versions of ourselves, but as you said, we kind of learn, we grow, we upgrade, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to a friend of mine who, at university, we all lived together, and she dated this guy who was pretty awful, basically, in so many ways. He treated her really badly. She treated him quite badly. It was a very, very toxic relationship. And her and I were talking the other day and just reflecting on, she never ever would be in that place now if that hadn't have happened.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like all of these bad experiences or bad relationships we have can actually teach us a lot, much like the really beautiful relationships can help us learn and grow as well.
Yeah.
But I think there is something about we need both positive and negative experiences of what it means to be in relationship with people to just evolve and be who we are. Mm. And I definitely think it's something, you know, even from my own experience, I think about even just friends who I've, like, moved on from or, you know, friends who I've kind of, like, you know, had breakups with, things like that. That affects us really deeply.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny that there's so much focus on, like, a romantic partner really shaping us. Whereas actually I'm like, friendships are so important. Our family is really important. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think we need to look at it as like a wider picture rather than seeing a romantic partner as the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
Because as you said, relationship is, you know, so many shapes and forms rather than just one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we could touch on so many things, but in just the last thing you just spoke about, it's all about balance, like I mentioned. So imagine putting all that energy into one person and that person has the, not the responsibility, but the burden, right? To sort of make sure you're okay. And that's not how it really should work. And that codependency can be very dangerous, especially with the wrong person.
Yeah, it is so true, actually. And when you talk about codependency, you know, I don't know how much kind of your listeners will be aware of, like, codependency initially started as the partner of someone who is an alcoholic was initially where the term came from, and it was kind of this dependence, this person that you're with has a dependency on alcohol, and you as the codependent is kind of like you're dependent on their dependency on alcohol, and kind of you're so drawn and attached, the push-pull of they need me to break away, and then when they do, you're kind of left with, oh, but my whole purpose was wrapped up in this person and their addiction, and what am I going to now do with myself? So that's initially where it stemmed from. But I think, you know, the way that psychology has kind of evolved and the way that people talk about it now is, you know, you can have a codependent relationship with your mum or your sister or, you know, all of these different things. And I think there are so many different areas which it's quite risky, as you said, to depend so wholly on someone, and your whole narrative about yourself gets wrapped up in one person. And I think it really does come back to what you said about the balance of, you know, having lots of different thriving relationships rather than just one specific focus in your life, which, it can be really consuming.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think also if you just talk about attraction as well, I don't know if we should be talking about this, but we're going to talk about it anyways. Sometimes you think, okay, if you overproject your interest in someone, that would hopefully show up in terms of progressing things. In reality, reality, it doesn't work that way. And I think if I was to sort of break things down, there's a lot of media that tells you, okay, just pursue, chase the person, and that person will see, you know, you for, you know, how you wanted to see you. But in reality, it's not the case. Some people are right for you, some people are not. Yeah. And that's kind of how you have to move through life.
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. So almost as though the idea of, like, if you relentlessly pursue someone, oh, they'll eventually give in and like you as well.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I think quite problematic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's really fun, and I wonder as well, this is so interesting to talk about the difference between the narratives that, like, go out to men, which is probably something like that, of just pursue her, and eventually maybe she'll give you some attention.
Yeah.
Whereas for women, it's the exact opposite of don't ever, like, let him see how you feel, be mysterious, be sexy, he'll find that really alluring, he'll be chasing you. And it's so interesting, the different narratives that we receive based on our gender.
We can talk about this, like, it's so many layers, but...
So many layers.
Just to answer that question, I think, stereotypically, that's how it looks like, at least in today's era.
Yeah.
Where if you look at, like, the 1950s and all that stuff, it's like, okay, the man was on his purpose, he was doing his thing, and, again, this is not to say, you know, back in that those days it was fine or whatever, but it was more like his lifestyle attracted the right people in his life, versus... Yeah. In these movies and in, you know, TV shows, it's like, okay, I like this girl, she's beautiful, and you don't really see her for who she is, just the exterior.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, now I'm going to romanticize this image of her, and then I'm going to try and project my interest versus me being this guy to see if she's attractive or not. Does she fit my world? Or, you know, is she just seeing me for attention?
Yeah.
And it's very interesting.
So true. And even, you know, what comes to mind there is thinking about, you know, the image that we project, you know, whether that is something that we perceive from, you know, TV, film, whatever, even, like, social media.
Yeah.
And this is something that comes up so much is friends of mine who are dating, they frequently talk about, you know, if they match with someone on Bumble or whatever, they, before they get someone's number, they're like, what's your Instagram?
That's happened a few times.
And I just find that so bizarre because from my perspective, as running a business, I suppose I also have my personal account and my business account, but there's something which is very much like, I know my Instagram reel is just the highlights of my life. Mm-hmm. It's really trivial. It doesn't really represent who I am. Mm-hmm. So why do people want to see that? Do they, 'cause they really, it seems like all people really care about is the way that you're perceived rather than who you truly are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I find so interesting. My friend's like, oh, I want to see what, you know, his friends are like. And I was like, you want to look at his lifestyle and see if you could fit into the lifestyle, not to be with him.
To be with the lifestyle. Well, this is Culture Shock. So, okay, we're going here. So I've been on certain dates where, to my face, they said, I'm looking for a high-value man. And if you're that, great. Kind of thing.
Wow.
And it's not pressure, because if you have it, fine, no problem. But it's the idea of that was the reason why you're attracted to me in the first place versus getting to know me. And the things that I've accomplished, they're great and stuff, but they don't really identify who I am as a person. So I try and read those things out now. And I kind of, in a way, have to filter much more critically in terms of who I allow in my life versus like, okay, doors are open, let's see what happens. And then it's just like, oh no, I'm wasting my time with people who want something from my, you know, lifestyle, which is very weird. Yeah.
And it's interesting as well. It comes into so often when you first meet someone, you know, whether this is in a work context, but, you know, particularly when it comes to dating or meeting new friends, everyone's almost like first question is like, so what do you do?
I hate that question.
And it's as though people are like, your work defines who you are. And for some people, it really does. So for example, for me with my own business, I think, yeah, I represent my business. My business represents my values, what I care about. But for so many people, their job's just a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost what people want to see is they're like, oh, well, do you work in financial services? Great, you can facilitate the kind of lifestyle I want. Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm trying to think of a different example.
You've got lawyers, doctors, all that stuff.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because that's not a true representation of who someone truly is. But we've just said, do you fit into this ideal? Yes, I want to marry a lawyer, so you'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, let me find out who you truly are. And the other stuff is superficial. Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, someone, you know, you could be with someone who's a lawyer, they turn around 50 at age 50 and they're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or they hit a financial crisis.
Yep.
And you've invested everything into this lifestyle, this perceived idea. It's lunacy, in my opinion.
I completely agree. And if you look at social media, it doesn't really help with the idea or the narrative of what human connections should be. And I think there's so many stories where people are like, okay, well, I married this guy and he fell off and now I'm going to move away from that situation. There's a term called hypergamy. I don't know if you ever heard about it. But it's the idea of people dating up their social rank or their sort of lifestyle or just, you know, in terms of attractiveness. So this kind of happens. So you might have a good thing going on and then you're like, actually, I saw a better option. And because I wasn't fully connected, I wasn't in love with that person, it's okay for me to move on to the next person or the next opportunity.
And it's something that comes up quite a lot. It was, you know, even when we think about dating apps, it very much is that idea of there are hundreds of thousands, I mean, this is in London, you know, hundreds of thousands of single men or women on my phone waiting for me to swipe. And so how on earth are you meant to see the value in the person who's in front of you when you're like, oh, there's that tiny one thing that I'm not sure about. I'll ignore them and find someone who I think is 100% perfect. And, you know, we've not given anyone a chance. We've not truly connected with anyone. And it becomes almost, like, transactional. And I think that's also why we see, like, such a rate of people ghosting one another because they don't see any value in that person. They're like, oh, it's just this person I met online. I was going to ghost them. Rather than thinking they're a human being. And it does, you know, people disassociate and it takes away the simple fact of irrelevant of what you might give me from as a romantic relationship. Maybe I could get so much from you just having you in my life. I still think some of my closest male friends are people that I've dated in the past and it hasn't gone in a romantic way. Neither of us are bitter about that, but it's like, oh, actually we saw the value in one another and what we could bring to each other's lives. And that's such a special thing. Whereas I do remember with one of them, I wanted to ghost him. And because I was like, oh, I don't see it going anywhere, I want to ghost him. But he was quite persistent and he was like, it's not because I think, you know, we're going to get married and it's all going to be amazing. He was like, I just really enjoy talking to you. And I was like, oh, yeah. And, you know, we're friends now. So I think it's also as well that that open-mindedness of if that person isn't going to fit in with your exact ideal of a partner that you've created in your mind, they could fit in somewhere else as a friend. And I used to think you can have like enough friends. Whereas now I think, I'm like, can you have too many friends? I think I'm quite open-minded now. I'm like, oh, I've got room for everyone.
I mean, it's such a interesting, by the way, I like your story. I like exactly what your intent is after, you know, things don't work out. And it's an interesting one because maybe from a male to female perspective, it's probably a little bit different.
Okay. This is why we're
this
here.
This is why we're here, yeah. This is the controversial questions and answers. So I guess for me, I've come to realize if I'm actually attracted to someone that I don't want to have ulterior motives. So I'm very clear with like, okay, well, the reason why I was pursuing in the first place was because of X, Y, and Z. And so it would be early unfair to myself and you to continue the relationship. Because if I bring another person into my life, I don't think that friend will still be in my circle unless the person I'm with is really cool about it and can understand why we're still friends. But then the origin of that story, we awkwardly explain, and I just don't want to have the conversation.
But that's not to do with you don't want both people in your life. That's more to do with you don't want to face the other person and their perceived notions of what they've created about you and the other person.
Ooh, that's a tongue twister. potentially.
Sounds like avoiding conflict to me.
I don't want... No. So it's not the avoiding conflict. It's the simplicity of my life that I really just... In a way, if I put investment into a situation that I'm trying to like, okay, let's see where it goes, it's very hard for me to maintain that and then also progress with someone else and see how that goes as well. So it'll almost be like one-sided. I'll be like, well, okay, we'll be friends. And I'm like, I don't really text you as much. So that value kind of diminishes. Unless, you know, you are like in the proximity of me seeing you all the time, of course, that'd be fine. But yeah, it's one of those things that I had to sort of understand and also managing my life as well. What can I deal with at the same time?
Yeah, it's true. And it almost comes to kind of what I was thinking as you were talking there was about this idea of how much we invest our time into people. And I think there's something, especially when you're initially dating or like in a relationship, that relationship takes up so much time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something which I talk to my friends quite a lot about, is this idea of, from fear, whatever, they're like, let's date lots of people at once, we don't get too invested in one person.
Mm-hmm.
But actually then, because you're kind of spreading your attention, so to speak, you're then not investing in one person. And almost in my mind, I'm like, well, are you investing in anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's so thinly spread, you know, you see them on a rotation almost.
Okay.
And it's kind of then like, you're so frightened of being hurt, or so frightened of that person rejecting you, that you're not even giving them a chance. You're not actually even connecting with them and giving them the amount of time that building a strong relationship deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I've like really thought a lot about, was, can you date more than one person at one time?
Okay. Shall we talk about this from man to woman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love
you
this conversation.
You go first. Go on.
I love this. Oh, okay. I'm going to go there. This is recorded. I feel bad. For anyone listening, I'm sorry. no names. But I think, at least in this era, having a rotation would make sense, until the right person comes into my life and actually says, you know what? Everything clicks, right? The only reason I'm saying rotation for me is because there's a lot of that uncertainty that exists. So it's not necessarily me just saying, okay, well, I want to date women. It's like, okay, if there's people who are in my life who want to get to know me, that's fine. I'm not going to just kick everyone out just to test one person. So not to test, but you know what I mean, to get to know.
But you said kind of when the right person comes along, it'll click.
Yeah.
And if you're, say you meet them on the Wednesday and you've been on a date on the Monday,
mm-hmm.
How do you know that that's just not like a really great day
because
that you're having?
It takes time.
Mm.
It takes investment and time. Mm-hmm. And I guess with dating, it's all about like, okay, quality and the time, right? So one quality date doesn't mean like all in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's have a series of that. Communication's key for me as well. And like love languages, which I'm not going to express here. If they're met, cool. I understand that. And then core values as well. So there's a whole layer of like criteria that exists. But to get to know you doesn't necessarily mean you have to fit all those things right now.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, I have to know you first and I have to be attracted to you. And then from there, we can sort of figure out where things sit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also respect the woman's perspective as well. Like whether she wants to be like single and figure things out, or she's like, I really want to date someone seriously. My intent is very clear, like, okay, I want to see how things go.
Yeah.
And if they go well, then we can have that further conversation.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of assumptions from both ends saying, I want this, like, I want to get married in the next 18 months. And someone who's just like, I want to live the life that I want to live until I find someone that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So
it's so interesting because I used to very much be in the same mind of you. And I remember there was a time a few years ago when I'd go on like 3 or 4 dates a week, loved it. And I then got to the stage where I couldn't remember their names. I couldn't remember what story I told one of them. We were on like 3 or 4 dates and I was like, I can't remember if I told you this or if I told the other person this or like, was it you that had 2 sisters? And
so
I think that for me is why, and maybe this is a personal thing, I don't
of
know.
Course.
This is why I'm like, I could probably only go on like 1 or 2 dates a week maximum.
Yeah.
But also that's the thing, as soon as I start to maybe kind of like someone, I think, no, I want to give them the time. And I probably stop dating other people.
And that makes sense. And I've fallen into that bracket as well.
Mm.
And that's exactly the way you kind of connect with someone and go, actually, you know, it makes sense for me to just put more energy into getting to know that person. It's the same way I do it as well. But it doesn't start that way, and that's kind of where I'm like, well, if you're on the... Especially, let me actually talk about this. If you're on the dating app, you can't be like, I'm going to match with one person and then see how it goes with that one conversation. So...
That's interesting.
The paradox of choice exists in our world, where before in our parents and, you know, older generations, it was like, okay, proximity-wise, we know who we're talking to. You can't get away dating 5 people because everyone would know you're dating 5 people, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot more, you know, freedom to do that.
Yeah.
So.
And I do think as well, it's interesting, even thinking about, we're talking about this in a context of living in probably one of the busiest, most like cosmopolitan cities in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you could date three or, you know, five people at once. You'll never bump into the other person. You know, we live with, like, 8 million people, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it makes me think, you know, some of my friends... So I grew up in Edinburgh. You know, if you went on a date, you would probably bump into someone you know.
Yeah.
And so I think the dating rules, so to speak, and the expectations are very different. Whereas I do feel like here in London, it is kind of like anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I love that freedom. And I think one of the best kind of learning experiences is to date in a city that you love, where you can have so many different experiences with so many different types of people.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, it can bring about that sort of... just a bit of indifference. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm not looking for a relationship, I can just do what I want, and no one's going to hold you accountable to how well or how badly you treat people.
Yeah.
Which in some ways you're like, it's great, I can do whatever I want. But also then, when you're on the receiving end of being treated badly, you're like, I'm never, ever going to have a mutual friend with that person to tell them that they treated me badly.
Yeah.
And I think that's how kind of bad behavior in dating kind of spirals out of control,
yeah.
doesn't it?
And so I've come to that realization as well. And not to say I was a little bit, not bitter, but just like, but where's like, yeah. I'm dating girls who are unemotionally unavailable.
Oh, that's a whole other topic to talk about. Oh, yeah,
no way, it's cool. Like, by the way, nothing wrong with that per se, like in terms of the girls themselves, but it's me figuring out, wow, this is a common thread. And I'm like, why is it a common thread? And then I was like, okay, I see why. Is it how I met them? Is it me not qualifying those things? And by the way, I don't mind very early on if that's kind of what it is. But
yeah.
when you start thinking about investing, it's like, oh, you can't do that because that person yeah. isn't ready. So it's like, fine.
Yeah.
So you can enjoy the benefits, but you can't make anything work.
It is so true. And it's funny because maybe this is about 2-3 years ago. That's when I first started thinking, like, casual dating can be really, really fun.
Yeah.
And all of my friends joke, like, Jessica's a 20-something who dates unavailable 30-somethings. And at the first I was like, haha, this is kind of funny. And then I'm like, there's another one. Yeah. And as you said, you start to realise maybe what you're attracting. But also at the same time, I think with that is... there's some level of safety in it because you know it's never going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a safe environment. No one's expecting anything. So if it doesn't work out, you're like, well, I knew it wasn't going to work out anyway.
Yeah.
So you're not pushing yourself. You're not stretching any boundaries. And actually, you know, it came to a realization with myself. Was like, the only person I'm kidding here is myself
mm-hmm.
because I'm missing out on an incredible connection with someone who I could really invest in. Who is emotionally available, and actually, to sound big-headed, but I'm like, and they're missing out on all that I have to offer them.
It's the same. Yeah. But it's kind of like, what you're attracting is who you are, and that's when you have to take self-accountability.
Oh, that's so true. And
that was like, okay, shit, I gotta really do something about...
that is so
maybe what
true.
I need to think about my perspective of how I'm doing this. And I was like, okay, if I'm really serious about something, double down. But otherwise, like, I understand it's always going to be a case where you're going to meet people, and if I'm looking for something serious, then cool, I gotta say, look, maybe at some point I will want something serious. If you're not ready for it, that's cool, we can get to know each other.
Yeah.
But at some point there will be a thing where I might meet someone who's ready, and
you put
the ball in their court, and if they stay, they go.
Yeah.
And it's all about the abundance mindset. So
and I think that's exactly it, isn't it, is when we think about dating someone, if we are very open and honest with saying, yeah, I'm open to what happens, but I would like a relationship,
mm-hmm.
or you're open about saying, actually, I'm just looking for something really casual right now,
mm-hmm.
then you set the tone, and that's then what you attract.
Yeah.
And I think the key thing, especially when it comes to saying, I'm looking for a relationship,
mm-hmm.
people find that repels other people. And they're like, whoa, 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 that's scary. Why are you so intense? Why are you so serious? And I always say to my clients, I'm like, that person who's rejected you because you set the intention of wanting a relationship does not want a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because there will be so many other people that do want a relationship.
Yeah.
But I think where that becomes dangerous in a way is we kind of kid ourselves. and were like, oh, I do want a relationship, but I'm going to be like casual and light and say to people I don't, so they don't think I'm too intense and crazy lady. But then we end up kidding ourselves, because you said what you put out is what you attract. And if you're kidding yourself into thinking, I can do casual when you just want a relationship, that's what you're going to attract and you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting because it can always change as well.
Yeah.
You can always like, oh, well, I'm actually liking this person. And they went, oh, no. But that's the, you have to set the boundaries for yourself and realize, okay, well, make it very clear early on. Actually, you know what? I'm kind of liking you a bit more than I should. And so I'm going to make a decision. This or that. But what happens is you kind of hold on in hopes to persuade that person.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, he did me this or she did me that. And you're like, well, you tried to change that person.
Yeah.
You shouldn't go into a relationship changing the person. You should be going into a relationship trying to figure out what you want for yourself and what you can give to others.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly it. And I do this with my clients, my friends, literally anyone who I can do it with, is really just for them to sit down and take, you know, 10 minutes and just think, what do you actually want? What are you actually looking for? Because most people will say, you know, the first thing that comes to mind will be like, oh yeah, I'm looking for a relationship. And then they're like, oh, but actually if I met that person, then they'd maybe make me do this. And I'm like, I really also want to go and do this and blah, blah, blah. And actually it's quite a bold level of self-responsibility to know within yourself, this is what I want. And actually I'm not going to kind of compromise maybe for someone else.
Yeah.
But I think so often we don't have that conversation with ourselves kind of internally. And I think a lot of it comes down to self-responsibility. I think, you know, what we kind of talked about last time, wasn't it, was how self-responsibility is so linked to self-love. And if we hold ourselves to a certain standard, then we're able to communicate our needs and see that other people are going to meet them. But if we don't love ourselves, therefore we don't hold ourselves responsible, we're going to compromise for anyone and everyone who'll have us and get swayed. Maybe we'll get dragged into one of those long-term relationships that's always a bit awkward and we don't really want it. Or maybe we're just going to casually sleep with someone who actually we really, really care about and want something with. Both of those, you know, dangerous in their own way.
And, yeah, I guess, you know, with everything you just mentioned, it's all about, you said self-responsibility and just the idea of long-term, short-term, but relationships. And I think the idea, it's more romantic than the actual thing itself, you know, actually putting time and stuff. Just from your perspective, at least with the people you've been coaching, how is it for women today in terms of dating, especially, you know, with the idea of like online dating and finding someone who's compatible with them?
Yeah, I think really the biggest thing for people is about kind of how they attach to others. And I don't know how much you know about attachment styles, but really there's kind of, did we talk about this last time?
Maybe. This is the recap. Yeah.
There's kind of three different attachment styles. One, which is you're kind of anxiously attached, and I suppose to put it very simply, quite an anxious person in a relationship. You want a lot of attention and reassurance, can sometimes get accused of being needy. Then on the other hand, there's kind of the avoidantly attached, which is a bit more aloof. Of course, they crave intimacy, but they push it away, they self-sabotage. And then you have in the middle, which is what we'd call secure attachment. And that's obviously what everyone is striving to be, where you have great communication, you can hold a relationship well, you meet other people's needs and you communicate your own needs, you have clear boundaries, you know, just a really beautiful thing going on. And I think, you know, with so many of my clients, they fall really to one extreme of the other, either avoidant or anxious. And I think the key thing is to work on, why are we that way? Why do we kind of either cling on so tightly to a relationship after one date? Or why is it that we go on 5 dates with someone who's amazing and we're like, oh, there's this tiny red flag, so I'm going to ghost them. And it's kind of the two things, and it's really trying to help people get to a point where they understand why they have those self-sabotaging habits, and helping them to kind of get to a place where they feel more secure within themselves, and how that then kind of contributes to how they kind of show that in romantic relationships as well.
Right. Do you think, you know, upbringing, relationship with parents, is that part of it, or is it something else.
Yeah, so the very, like, basic psychology behind it is your attachment style comes from how you were treated by your primary caregiver. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, that's a grandparent. For some people, that's their dad or their mum. Mm-hmm. And it really is about the level of care and needs that they had the ability to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's quite easy within this conversation to be thinking that we're accusing the parents of doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There is no perfect way to bring up a child.
Yeah.
There is no perfect template which will create a secure family. That's just not possible. And so everyone in some way will be compensating in some ways or other. And yeah, it's about doing a kind of, I think a lot of kind of that inner child work and saying, this is what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is still what I need now.
Yeah.
But it just obviously looks different because we don't rely on our parents for the same level of care. So we're looking for it elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I've read, you know, and not say experience too much, but kind of, you know, no, I have, I'm not going to lie, I have. Without giving too much detail away, but sometimes you date your parent figure.
Oh, I've done that, yeah.
Yeah. Or they date you in the hopes that you're like, even like the parent or somewhere outside the characteristics of the parent.
Yeah, and it is very much that extreme. And I think, you know, there is such a common thing of, like, women want to marry someone like their father. And that's really, really common to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that thing of, we look at that as, that's what provided us with security. But also at the same time, maybe we didn't have a good relationship. We're striving for their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting, isn't it, how we go into any relationship. You know, attachment style can also react to our friendships. And actually, it's what we're craving from someone, or what we push away, or the way that we act, and the way that we connect with others,
mm-hmm.
is really just what a little child within you wants.
Right.
And I think we overcomplicate it, and actually it's like, well, what are the really, like, simple things that you wanted as a child? And that's really all we want from people as well, but we overcomplicate it, I think.
Mm. Where do you think this overcomplication comes from? Is it just the needs of the adult in terms of the stimuli, or is it something?
I think it comes from, we like to think of ourselves as quite complicated beings, and actually our very, very basic needs, you know, if it really goes back to the very simple, like, hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
You know, we need water, shelter, food, warmth. And within our day-to-day lives, of course, we can create most of those things for ourselves. But security is such a big one. And often that's what we most crave in a relationship, is just someone who is going to sit with us in the hard times, celebrate with us in the good times. But somehow we've come up with this notion of, oh, but we need someone that we can, you know, post on my social media, and they love all the same stuff as me, and they have to have the same lifestyle. And I think that we don't need that.
Mm.
It's just that that's an added little want to go with our lifestyle rather than our very basic human need for connection.
Yeah. And I think the more I think about it, maybe this is, I'm not speaking for all men, just speaking for a subset, whatever. But I don't think that idea of, like, okay, I'm going to show that person off to the world and, you know, I want her lifestyle. Like, I think when it becomes, you know, different for men, it's, our needs are a little bit different towards what a woman would want from a man in that perspective. It's interesting that you say all that, because it's like, okay, the security is very important. And I think for us, it's more about the nurturing and that feminine energy and just being so kind and all that stuff, right?
And it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose basically what we just said were, I said what I would look for in a father, and you just said the nurturing that you would almost expect from a mother.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
So that's it. We're such basic humans.
Yeah, that's it. And we always kind of think, okay, we need this and that. Without going, well, I'm going to say it. In my mind, there was a point where I was like, okay, I want someone who's like a Stephanie, like a Stephen who's a Stephanie. So someone who's got the same ambition, goals, whatever. Yeah. Until I was like, nope. Because it's another version of me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could see myself in that person, but then I'm like, that's not what I need, right? Because I have that already.
Yeah.
So it's almost like that yin and yang.
And that's exactly it. And I think that's it, isn't it? We think, I want to look for someone who's really similar to me, but actually, you know, that can be really safe and really comfortable. But actually, in order for us to grow, we need people in our lives who are going to challenge us and push us and call out the things which aren't great about us and really celebrate the things which, you know, we probably don't see within ourselves.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were dating someone who's so similar to you, they would just think like, oh, you can get away with these bad habits, or like, oh, that's great that you did that. And they wouldn't pick out the really unique things that make you who you are, because if you're just like me, it's nothing special.
Exactly, yeah. And it's almost, like you said, I think learning from each other, that's kind of what relationships are about, right? Bringing the best out of each other, but also sort of overcoming those obstacles. And if you both are kind of captain of a ship, it's kind of like, well, who's looking outside, who's looking at... So it's all kind of, you know, you got to do your bit where you can. But, I mean, everyone's different. So, yeah, I can't speak for everyone.
No, exactly. And the thing that really comes to mind just talking about this is about being a team and, like, who's on your team.
Mm.
And, you know, as you said, we all have different roles within very different people's lives. And, you know, the people in our lives have different roles as well. And, you know, your romantic partner is one person on the team, and your parents are other people on the team, and, you know, your siblings or your grandparents or your friends, they all kind of build up the big picture on, like, who's on Stephen's team? And I think when we kind of go into it in silo of, like, Stephen and his, like, girlfriend or whatever, you forget that there's so many other people as a part of the team who are pushing you forward and cheering you on and, you know, giving you constructive criticism. And I think it's dangerous when we're like, it's just me and my partner. Or it's actually you and your partner are a team and playing on a bigger team as well.
Exactly, yeah. And I think this just leads back to what we mentioned, like, all the relationships matter. Right? So and everyone, it's all a balance. So you can't just, some people go all into a relationship and then realize, well, my life is so completely different because of, you know, I was following that program. When in reality, it's like you had your friends, your family, and nurturing those relationships are just as important as nurturing your romantic relationships as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's such a key thing, how, you know, I've definitely got some friends who, when they get into a relationship, they put all of the attention there. You know, I don't hear from them for months on end. And you only hear from them and you're like, oh, I know that one hasn't worked out. And, you know, I will always be there for someone, but at the same time, I think there'll be people who slowly drop off. And then they pick up new friends when they're newly single again. And I think, you know, it's them that's missing out on the connection of, you know, true relationship, true friendship, kind of going through the highs and lows of seasons together.
Yeah, and I think it's, the friendship is beautiful because there's no real, I mean, there could be, but for the most part, you don't have this like, oh, I'm benefiting from you, you're benefiting from me. It's just like, okay, you're both together, you're probably going through this journey together, and you learn from each other. Yeah, sometimes you deviate and go through your path, but you always kind of come back to each other. And it becomes one of those longest relationships if you really want to put the time into it. So
Exactly. And it's funny, one of my closest friends is getting married next year, and, you know, her soon-to-be husband has known her for, say, like, 5 years. And I've known her for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, happens.
And, you know, I've seen her through some really weird times and, you know, her whole time with her and all the highs and lows of their relationship. And I think, you know, it's such a special thing to have such deep connection with friends. And, you know, the connection that you have with a partner is very different, but it's not to mean that it's like a hierarchy of this person is better than my long-term friend. But they're just very, you know, they're very special, very unique relationships, and they all have such important parts to play.
Yeah, exactly. And they almost kind of tell the story of who you are. So, for someone to just come in, like, 2 years and just say, like, I know that person. You know, that snapshot of that person. And
define them,
Anyways, how much time do we have? Because I would love to talk about something very, not controversial, but just want to get your viewpoints on this.
Yeah, go on.
Marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it works today, or do you think it's still a construct that, you know, you know what I'm going to say,
right? So I suppose there's, like, I'm in two minds, because there's my very, very personal opinion, which is based upon my faith, my upbringing, which says that marriage is such a special, serious, sacred union between two people, which is such a powerful thing. But then there's the kind of the work side of me who's really kind of living through this with so many people. I've seen numerous marriages breaking down. And I think the key thing is marriage is not one set template.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost to merge my two sets of values almost is, for me, I think marriage is between you and your partner and what you make of it. And, you know, what a marriage is going to look like to you and what a marriage is going to look like to me is very different, and yep. It should be very different. And I think the key thing is we shouldn't judge other people's relationships.
Agreed.
We shouldn't judge other people's marriages. And I think that's my thoughts.
Okay.
To leave it light.
Leave it light. That's cool. I won't dive any deeper. I'm not going to throw the question to myself because I'm scared.
I'm only playing.
Now, I think very similar, actually, because, like, my upbringing, like, I grew up, you know, having my parents who were married as well, and obviously my faith as well, kind of all interlinked in that sense. So there's a lot of value that can come from a good marriage.
Yeah.
That's the key, right?
Yeah.
To find a good marriage means to be in a good relationship. To find a good relationship means to find a good partner. And that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. And so, to be a good person yourself.
Absolutely.
And to work at it. Yeah. And I think we live in a bit of a throwaway culture, whereas if we're like, you know, you hear about people a year into marriage who are like, oh, sod this. Yeah. And they get divorced.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, whether that's they didn't think beforehand what a marriage actually is, mm-hmm. or if they just thought it's a bit of a joke when they're in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it comes to what people see marriage as.
Exactly. And, yeah, I mean, you got to be aligned with that. So, I wouldn't do the whole, like, oh, yeah, I'm getting married, here's a big wedding, and da, da, da. Like, yeah, that's cool and stuff, but I know what I'm getting myself into, hence why I would like to take my time. I don't want to sort of jump into, not say proposals, but they're being like, oh yeah, I'm looking for this and this is the direction I'm going. And my answer's been no, because I don't know you long enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like when it had worked out, where it was like a stretch of time, we realised there's incompatibilities. So
yeah,
that's just a way of just figuring things out so that you know that when you jump into it, you know why you're doing it. Yeah.
And I think kind of one of the key things you said there was about, you know, kind of you don't necessarily want a big wedding and things like that. And I think this is the thing. Some people want the wedding,
mm-hmm.
and they want the honeymoon, and some people want the marriage.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes they're quite blurred lines, because people think when they get engaged, they picture the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
They don't picture the next 30, 40, 50 years of fights and, you know, how hard it's going to be. And the person you marry is not going to be the same person in 20 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose track of that, I think. And we don't... And I remember, actually, my aunt and uncle have been married for, like, 40-something years. And I remember saying to them, what is the key to this? And, you know, a bit of, like, a whimsical thing. They said, marriage is such a serious undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, yeah, let's get married! And it's like, well, actually, you're with this person forever.
I know, yeah.
That's serious, everyone!
Yeah, the forever part, I mean, if there was a checkpoint, it was like, okay, after 5 years... Do you want to renew this contract? Because, yeah. like, everything everything in life has, like, a renewal or expiry date where you can have a checkpoint. And it's almost like that safety check, like, okay, you are changing in 5 years. You are changing in 10 years. You are changing in 15 years. But when you sign, you go, okay, forever. It's like more than my mortgage. Like, you're going to be there forever. So it's, like, it's a big responsibility. So I really take it seriously,
And I think in some ways... You know, when we talk about forever, we just cannot understand that. Like, I can't picture, who am I going to be as a 60-year-old lady?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Exactly.
So you're taking on, by marrying someone, all of those unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary. And I think, you know, if the thought of marrying, you know, whoever you're with doesn't scare you and intimidate you a bit, I think you need to think a little harder about what you're committing to. Because if you're just committing to the next 5 years of, like, early marriage, fun, we're going to have a baby, you're not thinking about, you know, all of the rest of what's to come.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, when we do speak about life and relationships, but you're essentially, you know, take the romantic part of it. You're finding someone to do life with, right?
That's it.
That's all it is. Like,
that's what your friends are. That's what your partner is.
Exactly. Yeah. Your family. Like, the way I see it, like, I've disrupted or kind of removed the romantic element of what marriage is. Like,
yeah.
It's like, is this person going to be there through everything? Like, whether I'm going to be doing well or, you know, God forbid, like, when I'm not.
Yeah.
So it's like, can that person also hold that together or understand that?
Yeah.
And that person kind of shakes when things get serious. That's a thing where I'm like, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Where I can't really put that energy in that person because I know at any point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's it, isn't it? Is, you know, for some people, I've got a friend of mine, for example, who doesn't want to get married. Mm-hmm. She doesn't believe in marriage. Mm-hmm. And I almost celebrate her honesty.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe she'll change her mind, fine. But I celebrate her for saying, she's like, I don't want to be forever with someone.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't want that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost wish there was more people like her who would just say, this isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually, yeah, maybe marriage isn't for everyone.
I think that's the case. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, and, you know, culture shock it is. But, like, yeah, I think it's the relationship with yourself, right? You're changing every single time. And if you are able to do that for yourself, you have hopefully a chance of doing it for other people,
yeah.
whether it's your romantic partners or your family or friends. But if you haven't done the work in yourself, you can't be like, yo, I want this.
Yeah.
And then just, it's like starting a business with no money and just kind of saying, I'll see what happens.
Yeah. And it is that constant, it's going to evolve, it's going to grow, it's going to change. And I think it's where its level of self-responsibility is you're responsible for yourself and your well-being and your growth. But also your partner's responsible for their well-being and their growth.
Yeah.
And yes, you can support them and encourage them, etc. But also, it's not for you to kind of drag them along being like, here's a book for you to read and all that kind of stuff. They have to be proactive in their own growth as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because that's where the codependency thing comes in and all those different nuances and difficulties in relationships.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So many times you can be like, well, for example, if you work out and your partner doesn't work out, just a simple thing like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go to the gym. And then your partner's like, no, stay in bed. Okay, I'm going to stay in bed. Then you go get overweight and then realize you have health complications and stuff. And you're like, what happened to me?
Yeah.
And it happens because by that osmosis, you kind of fit into that mold,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then the other way around is like, you ask someone to come with you to the gym. And it's like, actually, you're changing that person because that person was never that person, right?
Yeah. And I think it really just comes down to what do you value?
Mm-hmm.
And are you going to find someone who has the same values as you? And I think that's not just in a romantic relationship. Do your friends have the same values as you? Do 100%. They have the same outlook on life as you? And I think that is just the most important thing, is understanding your own core values,
mm-hmm.
your own non-negotiables for yourself. And then you'll start to attract that in other people. And you'll be able to consciously push away people who kind of test those boundaries and try to make you compromise on who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, we'll keep on talking for a little bit longer, but like that abundance mindset and just taking time just to be like, you know what, if it's not right now, it'll be later.
Yeah.
Like, you can enjoy your fun, have your fun, do whatever, but you don't have to be like, oh, I'm running out of time. It has to be like this in like 18 months, 2 years or 3 years or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that is such a massive thing with, I was going to say, kind of our generation of, there's this idea, and we talked about it last night, with this idea of having to have certain things done by a certain age.
Yeah.
And actually, if you just take that pressure on, and I know so many people are like, but I want children, and I have to have them by that certain point. And it's like, how much pressure are you putting on your body?
Exactly.
And how much, you know, then less likely is it that you'll be able to have a baby because there's so much pressure on it, and, you know, all of those kind of things. But it's like, if we just take off the time pressure, where would we go in life? And I think people's lives would look so, so different.
100%.
And I think we just need to explore, you know, what makes us feel alive, what are our values, and what can we do that forever, basically?
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, oh, in the next 2 years, I've got to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, you might not do it then. Don't get disappointed, because you've got the whole of the rest of your life, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, and it's looking at time differently as well. If we didn't say our actual ages and we didn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like that, right?
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then at the same time, if you're 60, you'd be like, why was I so focused on that small thing?
Yeah.
I think we all, at the end of the day, get to where we need to go to.
Yeah. I do think it's so true. I say this kind of quote quite often, and it's always, it might not go where you want it to go, but it will always go where it needs to.
Yeah. Wow. That's deep. Is that our final?
I made it up myself.
Yeah, you made it yourself. Okay, my last quote was from Instagram. You made it up yourself. I'm going to trademark it so I don't steal it from you. Trying to figure out if there's anything else. No, that was nice.
Yeah, nice way to end it. I think it's so nice to be able to talk about things like this. And yeah, glad that we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know. I'm not a relationship expert. I'm just a guy just talking in a podcast. You're the relationship expert. You're bringing it out of me. So I think there's a lot to ponder and a lot to think about and stuff, which is cool. This might be a deep conversation that we're having, and people are like, why is this going so long? But it's important because life is about relationships, and
exactly,
you know, enjoy the relationships. That's the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy and invest in your relationships and invest in yourself.
Yeah, sweet. Well, that's the end of the episode, and I'm happy to say that, you know, I had a great time talking to you, and I hope you guys had a great time listening. So take care. Hey podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking the play button. But I need you to do 4 things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content. It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever, so I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those 4 things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.